Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon from the studios of 97.1 FM Talk, which has a temperature that's 10 degrees warmer than usual, which we're not used to.
That's breaking news, isn't it?
It is breaking news. It really is.
Oh, I love it so much.
I don't know about you guys, but we had the windows open at the Reardon household yesterday. It was a really beautiful weekend.
Yes.
And last week, what I was doing is like I was popping the air on during the day and setting it to about 75. And then, you know, when I get home, turn it off because then you had the cooler air. But this morning... I think we forgot it was going to go down into like the 40s. So I wake up. Becky was already up, and I go into the bathroom in the master bedroom. Sorry, the primary. I apologize for triggering people.
What's wrong with you?
I can feel the heat pumping out. I'm like, oh, it must have been pretty cold in the rest of the house if Becky turned the heat on.
Oh my gosh.
So like because we had the windows like wide open and didn't really even think about it. But I like the chilly temperatures in the morning. Fred, how'd you enjoy your weekend?
Oh, it was great. It was great. A lot of rain on Saturday.
That rain was so awesome.
I still could cut grass on Sunday.
You'll see.
There were parts of Saturday when it wasn't just a driving rain, where it was just so pleasant.
Yes,
I'm looking outside,
exactly,
I'm like, man,
Mark.
This is comfortable.
Yes.
I'm watching a little college football. I was cleaning the house a little bit, and it all came together. Ethan was calling a little college football, but had a 2.5-hour delay at Lindenwood because of the lightning.
Saturday was long, but don't worry, there was still a lot of good college football on in the evening, so I still got my fair share.
How about my Missouri Tigers there,
wow.
Ethan?
That was
they get lucky,
hit
didn't
the bell,
they?
Sue.
Oof. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
They were, you know, it wasn't pretty.
No.
But I don't know if a lot of people expected it to be pretty. Auburn has a good defense. That is one of the toughest places to play in the country. And it, honestly, first road game of the year.
Yeah,
Bo Pavula had never started a game as a road quarterback, especially in the SEC. So, all things considered, you survived.
No, I'll take it. And, you know, I had a friend who was at that game, and he's been at other SEC stadiums. He says he's never seen anything like it. So it is a tough atmosphere. Now, you have Vanderbilt coming up this week with
College game day.
Maybe one of the better quarterbacks in the entire country. Did they get game day?
That's the first time since 2014.
Right. That was what Mizzou got that at home with Oklahoma, probably, is what
yes,
I'm thinking.
Correct.
Was it Oklahoma?
Correct.
So, you know, here's what I like about this, though. We'll talk about this with Cusumano later this afternoon. I like all the attention being on Vanderbilt and Pavia, the quarterback, because, you know, that's bulletin board material for the Tigers. All right, well, let's look. Who doesn't love a good media gossip story, a good juicy media gossip story? And this thing with Rennie Knott has kind of headed in a bit of a different direction. Now, some of you might remember that I indicated last week that I thought, in fact, this was going to be related to an HR issue. There were some things that were, planted in my ears
floating
last
around,
week.
Yes.
Right. No, look, I had some people, you know, we all have sources, but there were some things that I was told last week that have kind of come to fruition in the St. Louis Magazine piece that I was really careful with, Sue, because
yes, you were.
I thought, man, these types of allegations are pretty out there. All
right.
Right. Now, there's been an update to the St. Louis Magazine story, and that's what I'm going to read you here, Sarah Fenske and the team over there, that they put out this morning. They broke the original story last week. I mean, the Post has been way, way behind on this thing. They basically didn't do much reporting on it at all. But, you know, this happened in a very abrupt fashion. It didn't seem to make sense. Rennie goes on Facebook and, you know, and Twitter and makes some comments, and he felt like he was blindsided. I think in the comments that I'm going to play here today, you'll find that he feels the same way. Now, he did go on Camo X earlier today, Sue. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
When I got here, he was on Camo X, and we were going to try to grab him, and then he kind of escaped around the other side of the building, and I knew that was going to happen. But we'll certainly have an invitation to Rennie to come on the show. But here's the story from, you know, St. Louis Magazine, and some of this is pretty serious. All right, so let's just put that out there. Knott says that his supervisor told him not to come in on October 9th, and that he was instead asked to join a human resources representative on a FaceTime call. There, Knott says he was asked about comments that he'd supposedly made about violence and guns, including one alleged comment about getting his AK-47. Now, candidly, I had been told by a source that there was something related to shooting and guns, okay? I didn't tell anybody that because I thought that is crazy, right? How is that possible? So he insists to St. Louis Magazine he never talked about guns in any context other than a journalistic one. I never touched a gun. I don't know where that comes from. I have some audio where he went on Facebook, says the same thing. He also says he was asked whether he had made comments about wanting to kick coworkers' asses, which he characterized as normal joking around that no one had ever complained about to him or to his knowledge to others. Now,
okay,
that's plausible.
I was going to say, also what made me go, of course, because most, you know, that can happen. But also he didn't say, no, I never did that. He just said, yes, but we were joking around.
And I do have some audio that kind of backs that up as well. And I can certainly see that,
yes,
that something could be misconstrued, right, or taken the wrong way. The problem here, I think, for Rennie is that there are multiple sources, okay? This is not just an isolated incident, and I think that there were things that were accumulating. And I'm going to say this as I read this story with all sincerity. I really say this with sincerity. I don't know Rennie. He's invited to come on the show. I'd like to know the story. But I really do hope that there aren't mental health issues that are at play here, because being honest, ladies and gentlemen, when you read this story in St. Louis Magazine, it seems that way. Now, he feels he complimented Sarah Fenske because Sarah gave him an opportunity to respond to the allegations, right? And he did go on Facebook and then on Camo X today. But here's what it says. The station apparently was unpersuaded by his, you know, explanation about joking around. Several of Knott's former colleagues say they'd become concerned in recent months, saying he seemed to be under stress and increasingly agitated. They were worried that his comments suggested trouble and resisted the idea of Knott returning to the newsroom. 6 days after the station's initial inquiry, so remember it was October 9th, on the 15th, that was last week, Knott says he was summoned to another call. This one lasted just a few minutes. He says he was told that the station's corporate owner, Tegna, has a zero-tolerance policy. He was asked to resign. I said this last week. I said it seemed like it was something that was related to a zero-tolerance policy, and that probably was what's going to come out, and that's exactly what came out. So he said, this is the part where I have a hang-up, all right? I want to tell you right now, I got a hang-up on something. Rennie, if you're listening, here's my hang-up. And maybe there's a good explanation for this. He says in the St. Louis Magazine piece, he says, I said to myself, well, if no one believes me after all these years, why would I want to work in that environment? Why would I want to work with people who are saying these things about me now? So he says he quit, and he says he's been grappling with the end of his time at KSDK. I don't understand why you would resign and why you would quit if you did nothing wrong. If you felt you did nothing wrong, I wouldn't. I'd make them fire me. Now, I don't know what the severance policy would be, but it would seem to me if you quit and you say, okay, I quit, that you we're not going to get paid, right?
Well, see, that's just it. Sometimes I understand what you're saying, but maybe they said, if you do this, XYZ,
yeah,
you know, we'll give you blah, blah, blah. We'll pay out your vacation or whatever you've got coming if you in your sick days. But if not, then and you're fired and you get nothing.
Right. Usually in a situation like that, you're going to sign something that says, I ain't talking about this publicly.
Right.
Okay. He's talking about it publicly.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's where...
Well, that's a good point.
That's kind of blows up for me, because I think that if there was a separation agreement, there would have been some condition in the separation agreement that he wouldn't be doing a media apology tour right now, which is kind of confusing. Now, he says that he's mystified why anyone would have complained about him, although he notes the station has experienced significant turnover lately. He wonders if someone overheard something and misinterpreted it. I think there's a very good possibility that that's
yes.
what happened with a younger person. He says, I think we've had a lot of change from people who don't basically know me. So let me play a little audio here. Here's from Facebook.
I wanted you to know that I am not a stressed out person, never have been. When it comes to the amount of work that I did at Channel 5 and what would cause me to have to do so much, I look forward to the idea of finding new ideas and new ways to do things. New ways to expose our community, new ways to expose our small businesses. That's why I did My Lou. That's why I look forward to doing Rennie on the Block. Man, I loved it. I every day would try to think about a new way of doing it. I look forward to learning about doing vertical videos and things like that. I try to encourage my coworkers to expand their own ideas and to find their own paths, even if what they did wasn't necessarily on television. Maybe what they could do was expand their ideas in digital. So
one of the things he says in the Facebook post is that he's not a stressful guy. He's not under a lot of stress. And he said he hadn't been sleeping, but that's because, you know, he's thinking about the next steps. That's called stress. Okay. You got stress. I promise you. You may not want to call it stress, but if you're not sleeping for a week after you've been fired and you've lost 10 pounds, you're under some stress. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're under some duress. So I would, you know, at least acknowledge that and maybe take care of yourself. And this comes from someone who was under a lot of stress and mental duress earlier this summer, and I lost 15 pounds, gained maybe a little bit more of that back than I'm comfortable with, Sue, and that is all credit to the sugar. So it says in this story, going back to the St. Louis Magazine story, while colleagues believe the limbo around his position may have been, hang on, Mark missed something really big. This is a big part of this, okay? I skipped a paragraph. In the last 6 months, Knott has been announced internally as the new anchor on the 5 p.m. newscast, a move he says was designed to set him up as a potential successor to Mike Bush. The station even went so far as to interview replacements for Knott on the morning show. Station sources suggest that some staffers assigned to the 5 p.m. broadcast balked at working with Knott after director of content Morgan Schaub was pushed out last summer. It wasn't clear to colleagues whether the move to 5 p.m. was still happening. Knott says it was definitely still happening and that he's still not aware of anyone who didn't want to work with him. He attributes the delay to turnover in key leadership positions at the station. Art Holliday left. You know, there's been a lot of turnover. So the SLM piece says, well, colleagues believe the limbo around his position may have been a stressor. They say that was pressure from station managers to get the ratings up and add hours of streaming to the app, a situation SLM previously covered. That was like a blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
with
that's
the stressor.
Definitely a stressor.
Here's what he said. This is a little bit of a montage from what he said on Camo X a couple hours ago.
Sorry that it came to this and it came to it in this way. Did you ever say you're going to kick somebody's butt? And I go, we say that all the time to each other. And just, Dave, I'm going to kick your butt. Because you said something, I'm going to kick you. And I go, really? A 61-year-old man's going to walk across the room on the set and just start pummeling somebody or attempt to pummel somebody? And let's be realistic. I think if someone confronted me about that, and hopefully it would be, here's what the context was and what the statement was, I would apologize for if that offended them or became a concern for them. You all know me. Are you kidding me? I have spent my time giving to the community, doing the stories. I've never been to HR. I never had a write-up. All of my reviews have all been exemplary. I've never not had a new contract.
Man, he's like the opposite of me.
Wow.
With the big HR file. There's stuff in the St. Louis Magazine piece that is disturbing, I will tell you. There's coworkers saying that he more than one occasion made comments about guns or potential violence. None of the narrative fits. It just doesn't. But here's the thing. I'm just going to tell you. Somebody's lying, okay? Either a group of people at Channel 5 have gotten together all in a conspiratorial way to tell a very similar story about behavior, or Rennie's not confronting reality. I don't want to say he's lying, but he's not confronting reality. There was an allegation in this, Sue, this was interesting too, that, you know, It says, in another case, sources say someone reported hearing him making a comment about wanting to stab a colleague. Coworkers noted to each other that the frequency with Knott made the comments involving violence seemed to increase in recent weeks. When asked to cut it out, he seemed to double down. That's a confusing paragraph. Then 2 weeks ago, colleagues say that Knott, a former college football player, made a comment about potentially having CTE or chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I can't even pronounce that word, so you always have to help me with that.
CTE.
Thank you. I said CTE, but I can't say that last word. That's a disease, you know, that football players have experienced with trauma to the head. And there's a quote that says the concern was widespread in the newsroom. Here's what I will tell you, that I have been told as well that this was something that was not isolated, that there was more, I don't know if I would say widespread, but there was certainly more than just one person who was complaining. Now, does that mean that they were telling the truth? I don't know. I don't know who to believe here.
Were they misinterpreting, or not?
That could happen, but it does seem like this wasn't just a one-day thing where all of a sudden something got triggered, something got interpreted, boom, you're gone. There was a buildup to this, right? Mm-hmm. And apparently people were asked, do you feel comfortable working around him? And they said, no. So he's going to tell his side of the story. I don't know if anyone else is going to come through publicly, but it is a fascinating little story, especially because he's talking, right? He's on Facebook. He's doing an interview. He's certainly invited to come on here. But I would caution, this is where it gets tough, because I got no bird in the hunt here. I don't really know Rennie. He's not a personal friend of mine. I like the guy from when I've been around him. But I think people who have come out with 100% support of Rennie and in completely discounting the Tegna aspect or the station concerns, I think you have to open up your mind to a narrative that's a little different. I really do. And I don't know, and I say this very sincerely, I hope he's okay. I really do, because some of the behavior in here is not, it's not good. And some of what I've heard is worse than what's been reported. Okay. That's just people are telling me things. I got people in my ear about stuff all the time, and I'm skeptical about everything. You guys know that. That's why I'm skeptical about both sides of the story here. And I'm not saying I choose one over the other, but I do think that this isn't just, and look, I know Sarah Fenske a little bit. She's a good reporter.
Okay.
And they're pretty buttoned up over there. They're not rolling with this from one source that might be able to be disqualified. I promise you that. Scott Jennings.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to do a little shuffling here because I didn't want to give Mr. Jennings any less time than he deserves. Of course, you hear Scott's radio show on 97.1 FM Talk every evening at 8 o'clock. You'll hear it tonight. We have John Locke coming up here, who's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And, you know, I think I have this David Muir cut. I'll play this to John, but here, this is going to be framed around this. So this was from one of the presidential debates last year.
All over the world, crime is down. All over the world, except here. Crime here is up and through the roof, despite their fraudulent statements that they made. Crime in this country is through the roof. And we have a new form of crime. It's called migrant crime. And it's happening at levels that nobody thought possible.
President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is actually coming down in this country.
Yeah, so David Muir has to get that comment in there. But the problem with that is it's not. And John Lott, who is a crime expert, he's been on the show for many, many years. He's awesome when it comes to the stats on guns in particular, says that he's done a little research into this. And the stats really say something very different about the crime surge. And look, we know this in St. Louis because we've seen, you know, Jane has brought this up. We've talked about on the roundtable where the reporting of the crime doesn't match up with the actual crime. So the numbers get cooked a little bit, and that's unfortunate. So we have John coming up, and then we'll do Jennings after that. Jen Say is going to be here in the next hour, the founder and CEO of XXXY Athletics. She is going to, well, first of all, there's a magazine that did a great piece on XXXY, but there's some stuff related to Title IX and the women's athletics. I know she's going to have something to say. I don't remember if I said this on Friday, but the Dodgers promoted this event with Leah Thomas that they were participating in, and they were fully behind this honor for Leah Thomas being Woman of the Year, blah, blah, blah. So I know Jen has something to say about that. We'll have Cusumano. Look, we got a Game 7 between the Mariners and the Blue Jays tonight. The World Series will start on Friday. We know that, unfortunately, the Dodgers swept the Brewers. They will be the National League representative, but we'll have to see what happens with the Mariners and the Blue Jays. Big win for the Chiefs was not exactly a nail-biter against the Raiders, and the Blues beat the Stars at home on Saturday. So a lot of sports to cover. And then, you know, this is interesting, too. This is John Ziegler, who is the co-host of the podcast, The Death of Journalism, also did a lot of work on the Penn State story and Jerry Sandusky. And it's very controversial because he makes a very strong case in his podcast that Sandusky is not guilty. And he has kind of a mind-blowing interview with someone who is about to be divorced from one of the so-called victims in that case. And what she says in John's latest edition of the podcast is fascinating. So we'll get to all that here and more on 97.1 FM Talk this afternoon. Don't forget, we have our big birthday celebration, which is coming up at Lit Cigar Lounge on Thursday. That's going to be a lot of fun. I haven't looked at that weather forecast. What does that say, Sue, for Thursday?
That's a good question.
We think that we might be outside, right? Is that what we're thinking?
That's what we're hoping.
Yeah, I think we're hoping that. Let's see.
Hold on. It's taking me a minute.
Even though it's a little chilly in the morning hours, I think that we're going to find that the
mainly
afternoon temperatures...
Mainly sunny, winds light and variable. So
65.
65 isn't bad.
No, that's not. If it's sunny and 65. But look, these are... this is a free party unless you have the VIP tickets, but we do need to know that you're coming, so we'd love for you to RSVP. We're going to have a lot of folks on deck on Thursday at the party who have been a part of the station and the station's success over the last 25 years. All right, we'll take a break. We got John Lott coming up, then Jenny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
All right, so John Lott's coming up here in a second, but let me play this David Muir bite again, because this is from the presidential debate last year where David Muir, legacy media guy ABC, wants to tell President Trump that he's wrong about crime.
All over the world, crime is down. All over the world except here. Crime here is up and through the roof, despite their fraudulent statements that they made. Crime in this country is through the roof. And we have a new form of crime. It's called migrant crime. And it's happening at levels that nobody thought possible.
President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is actually coming down in this country.
Yes, of course. And then that was the narrative. John Lott is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's with us this afternoon. Hi, John. Welcome back. How are you?
Doing great. Good to talk to you again.
So we've had issues here in St. Louis, and you and I have talked about this a little bit with crime stats, and you know the numbers get fudged quite a bit, and then it makes it look like maybe violent crime is down. You dug into these numbers from the FBI, and you kind of framed this around what David Muir said last week, and you kind of find something that's completely different than the narrative that was offered last summer, and that still gets kind of offered in some of the legacy media.
Right. Look, I mean, there are two measures that the federal government has of crime. They have the FBI data on crimes reported to police, and then they have the Bureau of Justice Statistics data, which tries to measure total crime, both reported and unreported, with something called the National Crime Victimization Data, which surveys about 240,000 people a year. It's really a truly massive survey. And the point is that what most people don't understand is that only about 40% of violent crimes are reported to police. Only about 30% of property crimes are reported to police. Prior to COVID, these two numbers, both the total crime and reported crimes, generally tended to go up and down together. That hasn't been the case since COVID. Since COVID, they've gone in opposite directions. While there's been a slight decline overall in the number of crimes reported to police over the last few years, what you found is that total crime has just soared. I mean, during the Biden administration, we just had data that just came out for the last year of the Biden administration. We had a 59% increase in total violent crime during the Biden administration. That's by far the largest percentage increase that we've ever seen during the 52 years that they've been collecting the data over any four-year period. And, you know, there's a couple obvious reasons for this. One is the fact that whether people are likely to report crimes to the police depends in part on whether they think people are going to be arrested and punished. And arrest rates have plummeted over the last few years. And so some people just don't think it's worthwhile to go and report if nothing's going to happen.
And that might be the case in St. Louis because we've had a pattern for that. And by the way, we can't even get, you know, and this is not a criticism of the cops on the street. I want to make that clear, but we can't even get 911 calls answered in many cases.
Right. But, and that's the second point to bring up. And that is even when you can get 911 calls answered, things have changed over the last 6 or 7 years. 6 or 7 years ago, if you called up 911, and we were reporting a violent crime, they would send out a police car and they would take a police report. Now, in many parts of the country, if you call up 911, the first question they'll ask you is the criminal still there?
Mm-hmm.
And if you say no, as will almost always be the case,
right,
the criminal will have already left the scene, they'll say, well, you can come down to the police station and wait in line and you can get a police report filled out. And the problem is that some people who would have previously reported a crime, now you're making it
more
time-consuming,
right? Exactly,
for them to do it.
Yeah,
and there'll be some people who previously would have reported a crime who aren't going to report it now. And calling up 911 doesn't count as a reported crime. You actually have to have a police report filled out.
So the other couple other factors here that play into the FBI data being distorted is you have some cities, and I think that this happened here in St. Louis with Kim Gardner. You have the DA's office downgrading a lot of felonies, and that happens. You know, look, people get plea deals made, but there is a significant number downgraded to misdemeanors, and it doesn't really balance out with the less, you know, serious felonies, I guess. You even report that Chicago has labeled some murders as death investigations rather than homicides. What does that do to the numbers?
Right. So there are a couple things here just to separate them out. Right. You often have prosecutors making plea deals and other things in order, you know, based on the strength of the evidence or what have you. But what gets into the FBI data is the original police reports. And what's happened in a number of places is that prosecutors like Alvin Bragg in Manhattan are just refusing to prosecute criminals for, let's say, firearms offenses. What can make the difference between a felony, which is an aggravated assault, and a simple assault, which is a misdemeanor, and those simple assaults don't get counted in the FBI data, is whether a weapon was used. If a weapon was used, then it'll be classified as a felony and aggravated assault. Now, the prosecutors don't want to kind of bite the bullet on reducing everything themselves, and so what they'll do is they'll put a lot of pressure on the police never to record a firearms being used in the assault to begin with. And so that affects the crime numbers. And of course, we've had situations like in D.C. recently where it's come to light that a number of police officers over many years have filed complaints, actually sworn affidavits, that they were ordered by their superiors when they wrote the initial police report to downgrade it to a misdemeanor, or as you gave the example in Chicago, not even to go and count it as a crime. In D.C., there's a case where someone committed a murder, and the police lieutenant, when he showed up on the scene, ordered the detective to write it down as simply taking somebody to the hospital, which isn't even a crime.
Right, right.
But the thing is, what's amazing is that police officers have been willing to do this, because when they do this, like this detective who swore out a complaint, he got fired, he got removed, or it may affect their promotions in the future. And so a lot of police officers just go along with this in order to not suffer consequences when they go against the higher ups. And yet they've still been willing to do it.
Yeah. And that's sad. But I mean, from a career perspective, understandable, I suppose.
Sure, of course.
Yeah,
and
these poor cops have been up against it here ever since Ferguson too. So I can't even imagine trying to do the job, especially under these circumstances. John, thanks a lot for putting this into perspective. Obviously, St. Louis is one of those cities that President Trump mentions every once in a while because of the violent rate of crime here. But we appreciate all your work that you always do. Thank you so much for jumping on here.
Well, you can see the drop in crime in Memphis, which isn't too far from you, that they've just had. So, but for doing that, so hopefully they can move into St. Louis too. But yeah. Thank you very much.
Let's hope so. Thank you, John Lott. We got Scott Jen. I see a fair amount of Suze News audio in the folder today.
Yes.
Can you confirm that we'll need that?
Confirm.
All right, good enough. We'll look forward to that, a Monday edition of Suze News. Right now, our friend Scott Jennings, 97.1 Talk political insider. You hear his show every evening at 8 p.m. right here on 97.1 FM Talk. Jennings, welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm great, Mark. Just ready to deliver common sense to the American people tonight on this very radio station. Excited to do it.
Yeah, you might as well just go ahead and plug. Who'd you have on today? By the way, I'm in the habit of kind of stealing some of your guests. I hope you don't mind.
Well, I have been sending you invoices as commissions for that, and you have been paying them. So I don't mind at all. Tonight we have the whip of the U.S. House Republican Conference, Tom Emmer of Minnesota. And we also have an interesting report from a girl named Jessica Costescue. She's with the Washington Free Beacon. And the story that she has broken is really critical. Basically, fentanyl coming across the border has plummeted, and it's because of the Trump crackdown on the border and on the cartels, and she's got a great report.
Yeah, she's one I'm actually going to steal, mainly because she's been a regular on the show, and I did see you tweet that out, and she's an awesome guest, so that is cool. So you had your options, because you live in Louisville, you're in New York, you're in D.C., all these things. Did you have to MC or attend a particular I Hate America rally this weekend? Because you kind of had your choice, didn't you?
Yeah, I was everywhere and could have gone to any of them. What I chose to do was go to Orange County, California, and hang out with a bunch of dedicated Scott Jennings Show listeners. Well, we have a big station out there in L.A. that carries the show, and several hundred people came out to hear a speech and hang out with me for the afternoon. So that was pretty fun. And so I went to a I Love America rally instead of a I Hate America rally.
Well, we're going to have one of those here in St. Louis, and I'll touch on that here in just a couple of minutes. But, I mean, I'll be honest with you, Jennings. So, I watched football yesterday, and then I saw a little bit today. Did that thing even have an impact? Is anyone, outside of the people who truly do hate America, what the hell was that worth, right?
Nothing. I mean, look, I think these people have replaced religion in their lives with this. I mean, they were passing out hymn sheets. I mean, it's everything that a religion would give you without you know, the faith in a God. I guess the God is politics. I mean, it's pretty pathetic, actually. And then you look at some of the sponsors of it, you know, the Communist Party of the United States is a sponsor. And then you listen to some of the clips of people who were there calling for violence and murder against Republicans. I mean, it truly was a hateful gathering. That doesn't mean everybody there is hateful, but boy, a lot of people certainly were. And that hate and that desire for violence is just always bubbling right below the surface. It's pretty bad.
Isn't it ironic that they have that, you know, obviously, and we could talk about the shutdown here, but let's face it. And I know that this ceasefire, and I've been covering Middle East peace for decades, right, is fragile. But to think what Trump has achieved and keeps achieving on not only the international stage, but on the economic stage here in this country, it really is kind of amazing. And they keep going at him with the no king stuff. That's seemingly the only thing in their arsenal right now.
You know, I've been trying to figure out, Mark, exactly what it is they're mad about. And what it boils down to for most of them is that Donald Trump is enforcing existing federal law. They're mad about ICE. They're mad about immigration enforcement. That's a lot of it. We've not passed any new laws. These are existing federal immigration laws. Biden would not enforce them. Trump is enforcing them, and that's what they're saying he's a king over. Now, he takes an oath to uphold and enforce the law, execute the laws of the land. They want to go back to a president who doesn't enforce the law. Trump is simply enforcing the law. That's all that I can figure this is about, but that's what they want. They want no immigration enforcement. They want the country to be overrun by illegal aliens, and it's kind of crazy.
All right, so where are we, do you think, in the shutdown? I thought maybe this would be a little short term. Now it looks like we may set a record. I heard somebody predict that. Brian Kilmeade on Friday, and he said that he was here maybe even around Thanksgiving or after Thanksgiving. What's your gut check on this? And, you know, how does it come to an end? Because the Democrats don't appear to have any leverage, at least any leverage that's working right now.
No, in fact, the public polling shows Trump has actually gotten a little more popular during the shutdown. That's number one. Number two, there's a story in the Hill newspaper today where a Democratic senator is anonymously quoted as saying, oh, we have plenty of votes to end the shutdown, but none of us wants to face the guillotine. Those are his words.
Yeah.
Of our base. I mean, they live in fear of a radicalized base that wants the government to be shut down because Donald Trump is the president of the government. And what's crazy is they're actually empowering Trump to cut the government. They're empowering him to cut employees, to cut government programs, to cut these grants that they love. So you've got a radicalized base shutting down the government, giving Donald Trump even more power. They don't know what they're doing to themselves. And all the while, he's getting more popular.
Scott Jennings back with us. You'll hear his radio show on 97.1 FM Talk tonight at 8 p.m. Help me with this. And I talked about this on my roundtable, Jennings, on Friday, with the J. Jones situation in Virginia. I feel very confused by that whole deal. Why in the world won't Democrats try to distance themselves and call for him to get out of the race? Now, my friend Jeff Smith, who was here, you might even know Jeff, former state senator, he said it's because they can't pull his name off the ballot. So they're kind of stuck with him off the ballot. If this was a situation where they can pull him off, things would be different. Your thoughts on that? Because it's stunning to me that people are sticking with him. It really is, given the circumstances.
Well, I think that's sort of the most ridiculous argument I've heard. If a Republican, I mean, you know, if the shoes were on the other feet,
yeah,
what would be going on here?
Yes.
And the truth is, I think it's the same situation we've got going on with the shutdown. Democrat politicians live in fear of a radicalized base, many of whom agree with what Jones said. I mean, look at what they were saying at the No Kings rallies. You know, there's a lady on tape today. I want to wake up and see Donald Trump's obituary. I want to murder Stephen Miller. They don't really have any fundamental problem with Jones. In fact, his campaign issued a press release the other day touting that he'd raised $500,000 after his debate the other night. So basically, a Democrat says, I want to murder Republicans, and Democratic donors say, take all my money. I mean, if that's what the donors are doing, you know what the base is doing. These Democrats do not have the guts or the courage or the spine to walk away from this violent, ridiculous person, and it's all because they live in fear of this radical base. Period. End of story.
On the John Bolton indictment, obviously the case being made, I'm sure it's been made on your panels on CNN, is that Trump is, you know, this is retribution, that he's weaponizing government the same way that Joe Biden did, although they never really admitted that Joe Biden, you know, weaponized government, did they?
No, they didn't. Of course, it wasn't just Joe Biden. It was Democrats across the board. It was Joe Biden. It was Tish James. It was Alvin Bragg. I mean, you had a number of Democrats weaponizing the justice system. Now, in the case of Bolton, his investigation's been going on for years. It started under the Biden administration. And if you look at the indictment and you look at the evidence, it's pretty bad. And most lawyers and national security people that I have been on TV with have said he ought to have known better. The evidence is damning and he's in huge trouble. So I really don't think you can lay this one at the feet of Trump. Just simply being a Trump opponent does not make you immune from needing to follow the law. And by the way, John Bolton's been around a long time. He knows well what the laws around this are, and it looks to me like it was either arrogance or sloppiness or both, but he's in big trouble.
We are now just to a matter of days before a revolution of common sense, how Donald Trump stormed Washington and fought for Western civilization, is released as a perfect Christmas and holiday gift for all our listeners and your fans this holiday season, Jennings.
You got it. November the 18th. Order it today. Go on Amazon. Type in A Revolution of Common Sense. Scott Jennings, Donald Trump, you'll see his face on the cover. It's a great picture. And on the back of it, you'll see a picture of Trump and me on Air Force One. It's going to be a great book. The president's excited about it. I'm excited about it. We're under a month away. And, yep, put it under the Christmas tree or whip it out to that relative that hates Trump at Thanksgiving. You order it today. Bring that to the Thanksgiving table and plop that guy out on the table right next to the mashed potatoes and see what happens.
I love it. By the way, these pre-orders, I would talk about Selena Zito with this because the pre-orders are pretty important, right, to have those. That kind of gives you some oomph kind of moving forward.
Yeah, pre-orders are important. And, you know, you want to make the bestseller lists, and pre-orders help with that. So, look, I don't control all the metrics, but I am in control of my own enthusiasm, which could not be any higher than it is right now. And I've got the first copy of it in my hands, and I'm so excited. I get a book with your name on it and picture of the president on it. It's pretty cool. And I'm looking forward. I'll be out on the road, as you mentioned. We're coming to St. Louis.
Yeah, we're trying to finalize some plans for Scott to come to St. Louis, likely in December. And then, by the way, the follow-up book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Chaim Bloom Changed the Cardinals and Got Them Winning Again. That's maybe in 2035, 10 years from now. We'll have to see. All right, Jennings, we'll hear you on the radio tonight. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Reardon. See you, brother.
You hear his show every night at 8 p.m. right here on 97.1 FM Talk. A lot of energy from Jay.
Yeah,
well, he's done. You know, he does the show basically a couple hours ago. Then he has some time off before he does TV. And, you know, they've been doing a lot of good stuff. I was kind of joking about stealing some of his guests. But believe me, I've been keeping an eye on who he has been sitting down with on the radio show. My point is, though, he does the live radio show. We roll it back at 8 p.m. It's only a one-hour show at this point. You know, there's some questions moving forward. I don't think any of these are going to be answered very quickly. But, you know, Charlie Kirk's on Salem Network as well with Hugh Hewitt. So will they perhaps extend Jennings' show? Will he go to 2 hours? Will there be, you know, some other things that have been happening? I don't know. I mean, personally, just knowing what Scott has on his plate right now, I don't know how he can do anymore.
Seriously.
Work. He still has Run Switch PR, which is his company in Kentucky, which, you know, I'm more than certain he's got people managing all of that. But, you know, they run campaigns and they do strategic PR for political candidates in Kentucky. Then he's got the CNN deal and he's got the radio show and the book tour and all of that. So a lot going on at one time. Now, I mentioned we are keeping my fingers crossed, too, because resources are so tough. And then he's got limited travel dates. We got a couple of days that we're working on, hopefully mid-December, like right around the 13th of December. We're just trying to lock down a venue. And then there's a requirement to buy, you know, a couple hundred books and then
right.
We get people. So hopefully I'm keeping my fingers crossed because this is a market we don't want to skip, that's for sure.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos,
maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.